Hey, welcome. Welcome to Arch Talk. This is Ron Jacobs, your host for all things architecture. And I am so delighted that you are with me today because today we have a really interesting show. A few years back, I began hearing some rumblings about things like a kernel transaction manager and that someday we'd have a transacted file system and whatnot. Now, you know, it takes a long, long time to see those things come into reality. And I don't want to tell you how long. It was a long, long time. But Windows Vista has the first version of these capabilities built into it. Now, I know what you're thinking. Well, you know, Windows Vista is a long time away. I'm not sure I can take advantage of these. But hey, learn something, will ya? Come on, learn something. I think you'll find this real interesting. I sat down with Dana Groff, who is a really, really bright guy from the Windows team, and he told me all about it. You're gonna find this interesting. Okay, so just tune in, focus, think transactional, and at the end, if you decide this was a waste of time, you can just roll back the whole thing, and I promise, all memories of this will be erased as the transaction rolls back. Okay, so, hey, that's it. Stay tuned. Dana Groff, Transactions, here we go. Hi, this is Ron Jacobs, and I'm here today with Dana Groff, who is a program manager for the Transactional File System team, part of the Windows division. And Dana, it's wonderful to have you here. Welcome to Arch Talk.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and, you know, so we're going to talk about some of the work you guys are doing. And as you mentioned, KTM, the Kernel Transaction Manager. I remember way back when I was on the Com Plus team, this was, you know, 2001, 2002, having discussions about some of the work that was going on with KTM because Com Plus still does, the DTC, the Microsoft Distributed Transaction Coordinator, which is sort of a different thing, lives a level above KTM, right. but sort of similar, and we were having discussions about, you know, should DTC be built on top of KTM and whatnot. I don't remember whatever came out of all that, but anyway, that's beside the point, because today we're going to talk about how this work, which has finally borne fruit in Windows Vista, is going to impact the way that people design and architect applications. So tell me a little bit about, just give me the high-level overview of what does this mean to architects?
Well, we're actually on kind of a beginning of a revolution. And I want you to think back, 20-some-odd years ago, when you actually had to handle errors. You had to, you know, if, then, else, right? And you handled each error, and you undid things, and it was all right there in line of code, and it became spaghetti instantly. And then, I would say about 1990, we got this cool thing called, you know, try catch. And so we would catch our errors, and we'd be able to throw errors. And then we still would have to undo things, and we'd have to, you know, drop our locks and fix up depending upon what the error was.
Well, wait a minute, though. See, that was, maybe you got to do that in 1990. But those poor souls like me who are writing COM and COM Plus applications quickly learned that if you let exceptions propagate across process boundaries, you were toast, right?
Absolutely.
So we couldn't even do that. We were always, like, checking these H results everywhere, which really resulted in some very, very hideous-looking code.
Right, and we don't want to, we didn't want to see that. So yeah. It took another 15 years, and we've come up with a better way of doing it, and that is, well, let's let the system handle releasing all those resources and cleaning up for me. And so my job as a programmer is to say, hey, an error occurred to the user, and that's it. So what transactions now allows you to do is to say, using a transaction, do this work. And by the way, if anything goes wrong while I'm doing that work, just undo that. And it is simply, from a coding point of view, it's literally that. It's saying using transaction, ... and you'll put a whole batch of things in the middle of there. And some of those things are going to be file system changes. And some of those things are going to be registry changes. And some of those things are going to be database changes. Now, today, you can do that with databases, right?
Well, so I was going to say, like, you know, yeah, we've been doing, you know, sort of database transaction stuff for a long time. And people are,
you know, totally clear on now. I open a transaction, I do some right, oops, it failed, you know, the whole thing rolls back.
Perfect.
So what you're saying now is that Windows Vista enables me to think of other kind of OS type resources as a transacted resource.
Exactly. And in fact, what I found people doing is they did everything in the database. Stuff including stuff that really wasn't appropriate for the database. You stick tons of music files or videos in your database. Well, the database choked. But you wanted to do transactions. You didn't want to think about it. You didn't want to think about, well, I'm going to update all this relational data, and I'm going to update some of this sound, or I'm going to update this visual.
You know, that brings up a very interesting point, because I know a lot of DBAs hate blobs. They really hate blobs. But yet people have, you know, resorted to that because, you know, maybe you needed to update some metadata and the file at the same time. But with this solution, what do we call this? TXF?
We call it internally TXF. It's really, I think the official name is Transactional NTFS. This is NTFS, guys. It's exactly what you're used to. It's NTFS. You just now have the ability to say, hey, I have a transaction around opening this file. And so
So what I could do then maybe is store some metadata in the database, and in the same transaction, write the file to a certain place.
Exactly.
And store the URL to the file in the database instead of storing the whole stupid thing in there.
Exactly. You've got it. And you update those, and the update happens in the database and on a file system, or none of it happens. A classic example is, let's say I'm getting a whole batch of data dropped on my system as a file, and then I consume that data. Maybe I stick it in MSMQ, mm-hmm. right? Or I stick it in a database. But again, those are transactional things. But reading that file and deleting that file isn't transactional. So I need to read that file, maybe modify it, and usually at the end, delete it, saying, okay, I'm done with this, I'm going to go to the next file. That's one transaction. I want that transaction to be coordinated with the update I did with the database. And, I can write code. I can write code to make this happen. But, again, that's the code that goes wrong. That's the code that's hard to test. That's the code that, when I make a mistake, now I've got to write some utilities that clean up orphan files around.
Oh, yeah. This is huge because, you know, here's the thing. Like, more and more, especially with Ajax stuff happening, I see a lot of, you know, a lot of people are thinking, well, we're going to just build Ajax apps and let all the stuff live on the server. But, you know, then they're forgetting all those people are running mobile devices or laptops that aren't always online, you know, and they want to have an application that works even when they're offline. And so one of the classic ways, of course, with .NET to do this is you're going to need some place to store your data. And the footprint of putting even something lightweight like SQL Express is still a significant footprint on a client desktop. A lot of people are just like, hey, I'm not going to have SQL on my desktop or my laptop. But, you know, so I might resort to using isolated storage. But then in the past, I've lost my whole transactional capability by doing that, and I have to write really complicated code to get that right. So this is a great solution for that.
And people understand files, right? They don't understand a database. So, you know, I'm not going to say to my mom, oh, by the way, open up Access and go look at this thing, right? But I can say, look in this folder. Yeah. It's for my PDA. And under this file, you'll see that file there. That's the picture you want, right? So just copy that picture, and you can put it somewhere else. Right.
Well, you know, and that's a great point, because not only do people understand files, but other apps understand files.
Exactly.
And if I stuff my photos into a database, my app is the only one that's going to understand how to read those photos, but any other app would not.
Right, right. And now you could have a fairly rich set of apps that are all working with a set of common data. And because transactional file system gives you isolation, and also even has read isolation, so you could have multiple applications looking at the same file. Now, I will kind of put the caveat, here's the fine print. There can only be one person writing to that file at a time within a transaction. We have a transactional lock for writers. But, you know, we have full isolation semantics. So I have one app that's modifying it. I have two or three other apps that are looking at that file. That's fine. They can do that. And by the way, they see the old version until I commit. And if they want to guarantee that they only see one version for their lifetime of their work, they can become a transactional reader. again, they start a transaction. They're just reading, right? They did a shared read, and we have all the same kind of sharing modes as we did before. So I'm doing a shared read, but I don't want it to change. Right? It's really kind of annoying when data changes underneath me.
Sure, yeah.
I can do that within a transaction, guarantee that I get one image on that file.
So this has some interesting implications when, you know, you think about sort of compatibility issues, right? Because, you know, I can imagine people have built up over the years a whole understanding about the way we work with files and how you can open them exclusively and things like that, and how it all works.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're sort of under the covers going to throw a new wrinkle at them. I'm assuming that you guys have done all the work to make sure that, you know, an app that's totally ignorant of this is not going to be affected in any way, right?
They have to be able to handle sharing violations, and so that's the same issue. So the only thing a transactional lock gives you is a sharing violation. The only surprise an app writer might have is when he tries to create a new file that is being created in a transaction. So I'm creating a file a.txt, and I have another application trying to create an a.txt. They'll get a new error message that says, oh, you know, basically that it's a transactional conflict.
Okay.
And that's because you don't see the file because it's isolated, the creation's isolated, but in fact the file is there. So that's the only surprise, and to be honest with you, I really don't think we're going to see that very often except for in new applications that are using transactions, so they'll understand that.
Okay. So now this is something that's only going to be available on Windows Vista, right? No other
right,
OS.
Right, right. It requires kernel changes, right? So we actually thought about putting it in R2, but the amount of changes that it would require really was outside the scope of an update to a server OS.
Okay.
We are literally changing NTFS. It's a big change, but most people are going to see the same NTFS. It's the same version. It's the same. All the undist structures are the same, but the .sys file is significantly different. And the kind of one of the guidelines of R2 was not to change things that are currently shipping in the box,
right,
and to give you a whole batch more. So this would have been very difficult to put into that environment. And one of the other areas that is directly impacted are filters. And so anybody who's doing a file system filter, a quota filter, encryption, antivirus, they might be surprised when a file rolls back.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Uh-huh. So we're talking now deep in the plumbing. And it's one of the areas that doing transactional file systems, it's kind of hard because there are so many things dependent on the file system and about exactly how the file system works today that you've got to tweak and help out. So you want to have consistent backups.
Yeah.
So I have files on disk C and I have files on disk D. And maybe these files are associated with one application and I keep updating both of them. I don't want to take a backup and see, one transaction completed, kind of like on C, yes, I see the completed transactional image, but on D, I saw it, my backup had something that was before that transaction started. So now these are inconsistent.
Oh, right.
Transactions guarantee consistency.
Yeah.
So we change VSS. We guarantee, I shouldn't use the word guarantee, but we ensure that this is a consistent image. How do we do that? Well, when the snapshot is mounted, it's first mounted read-write, and we actually roll back any change. But we also guarantee that the commit gets to both volumes or doesn't get to either volume. So backup had to change. We've worked with all the antivirus vendors. We've worked with all the encryption vendors and backup and replication vendors to make sure that works. We've had to do a lot of changes to the USN journal so that, when you see in USN, when you see a change, it's because it's committed.
Okay, so what? Help me with that. What's the USN journal?
Oh, he would have to get me in on that one. I don't remember what the TLA stands for. I only use it all the time. But right now, it's a way of seeing everything that's going on with a particular volume. Again, this is low-level stuff.
Okay.
Replication people use it to say, okay, I need to change that file. I need to change that file. It gets to say, okay, this is what is being done on your particular particular volume.
So for the, you know, the typical person who's not writing like low level disk utilities, I think the important thing to say is, right, you guys have been out working with the people who do create that kind of software to make sure that when Vista ships, it's working.
Yes, and you just don't need to worry about it. And that's actually, you know, I do want to pop up about 15 levels and get out of the kernel here.
Yeah, okay.
And say, from the user point of view, from the application writer point of view, this just works. Your file systems just work inside a transaction now. It becomes very easy. It doesn't matter if it's memory mapped. It doesn't matter really, you know, all those nuances of that you might worry about. It's just the file system works.
So let me ask you, because in my days as a dev lead, one of the things I used to do, the tools are so much better now, but one of the things I used to do is write these monster batch files that were like incredibly complicated and like, you know, build this thing, run that test, copy this thing over here, and all kinds of stuff. And, of course, the big problem in those was always, like, what if something went wrong and tried to, you know, can you do transactions from batch files?
Absolutely. And we've added a new keyword in command, right? So say transaction.
Yeah.
And say slash start, and that starts a transaction. And do your work, and then say transaction slash commit. There you go. And guess what? If that command shell died, rolls back.
Excellent.
Okay. So, you know, X copy all these things. Now, I'll do the caveat here. Yeah. If you're trying to then do a whole batch of file moves and then a database update, that doesn't work. And that really talks about, we get back to where we started here, there's really levels of transaction management in the system.
Okay.
So we're talking kernel transaction management in the command line. Uh-huh. And the database is working up there with DTC.
Sure.
And in the user mode, transaction management land. And going down the stack, going anywhere from managed code to Olay or whatever, and down into the kernel, that works. Going the opposite direction is... You know, doesn't really work. I should say doesn't work. I know the ways to make it work, but it doesn't really work.
Okay, so, just the, like in the world of, let's say Indigo, right? With Indigo services, you can ask for a transacted service, and it just sort of, everything knows to look in the context and say, oh, there's an active transaction, but that's a user mode kind of transaction, a DTC style one. And then, so ADO.NET goes to update a database. It looks and says, oh, there's a transaction in the context. I'll use that.
Right.
But what you're just saying is that the same does not occur if, you know, my batch file calls a command line utility that's running managed code. And there happens to be a kernel mode transaction active, but right now it's not going to go, oh, there's a kernel transaction active. I'm going to participate
in
that.
Right, exactly. And it starts getting kind of bizarre if you were then, what would I do with a kernel transaction that's going distributed? The reality is that I can take a distributed, a DTC transaction down to kernel, and that's fine. And in fact, if you were going to work remotely, and let's do SMB updates, so I've got remote file systems, and let's say that's a Vista or a Longhorn server. I can do transactions on files against that remote server. But those transactions are managed by DTC. That's done all under the covers for you. You as a programmer don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
But the reality is that when you start getting into distributed transactions, we always go up into user mode and use distributed transactions. The application programmer, all he does is he starts his transaction. Usually, he's doing it either in OLATX or he's doing it in managed code with system.transactions. Today, if you were to write code today, you do need to use some glue code.
Yeah.
We have this thing called inter-transaction scope and exit transaction scope. And what does that do? That hooks the user mode transaction scope, right?
Okay.
So the system.transaction environmental material to the kernel.
Okay.
So when you say enter transaction scope, what you do is you actually enlist in a kernel transaction, you enlist a user mode transaction. Actually, kind of the other way around. The kernel mode transaction is enlisted in the user mode transaction.
Okay.
So we both do that glue code for you. Today you see that it's kind of like, ooh, oh well, okay. That's the word about not being able to have a new just when WinFX is going out. So the
So okay, so there's some classes in WinFX to support this today?
But, well, so we have Enter and Exit Transaction Scope, which are actually Win32 calls.
Okay.
And hopefully System.io in the future, right? So this is in
Orcus
or later, I assume Orcus is going to be able to just do that for you.
Okay.
But today you actually have to use these Enter and Exit Transaction Scope. And in fact, Jim Johnson has it on his blog, and I presented it at the PDC, a really simple class that allows you just to wrap it, saying using kernel transaction, and you just wrap your I/O call that, and it does that for you.
Okay.
So it's really simple in managed code, in fact. Yeah. But I still have to expose it, and then later it'll be embedded in just into the classes. You'll probably say something like, you know, I'm going to use a transacted file stream or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Right? You know, but I don't know what the names are. But we're still working that out. But I'm hoping to see that in Orcus whenever that is.
So, you know, there's some interesting implications of having kernel transactions because, you know, although we've been kind of focusing on files, you were saying earlier that basically any kernel resource could be transacted, right? Like maybe a hunk of memory or, I don't know, so
anything. Thing, right? Absolutely anything. Right. And in fact, what I would expect people to do and as they kind of adopt this new paradigm is they're going to write their objects using transactions. They're going to have transacted hash tables and transacted lists and transacted B-trees. And those will just be part of your toolkits. And then you're going to be making whatever fancy object you have that uses those. And it'll be transacted as well. And so then it'll make calls potentially into the kernel, and in the kernel, hopefully, we'll have similar data structures that are transacted. Today, we have to be very careful. We have to make sure our reference counting is just right, and do we create these handles? Did we destroy any of the handles? Did we dereference it enough times to make sure the memory gets cleaned up? Wouldn't it be nice if that just wasn't necessary?
You know, you would think this would have a lot of help. Eliminate a lot of leaks, right? A lot of handle leaks and all sorts of things, right, that people have run into. And yeah, I mean, that's actually, it's a mind bender, right? When you start thinking about, I guess we've all gotten used to the fact that the world, before you get to the database, is somewhat chaotic, and you've got to be really, really careful. And then with the database, we've kind of come, you know, to the point where you go, no problem, we can just relax and
just do it, right?
Yeah, but before that, watch out, try and catch, and make sure you have your finally in here to kind of clean things up. And I can just imagine, in the future, people will write a lot of, very transacted objects, try and catch, and then in their catch, they'll just roll everything back. You won't worry about, keeping all these different objects in a consistent state because they'll just happen automatically.
Right, right. And actually, I'm going to point out, you don't even need to do the rollback yourself. But the fact that you've left the transaction scope, at least in managed code, it rolls back for yourself.
Excellent.
And you haven't said, there's a keyword that came on, I believe it was Whidbey, that says you're finished, right? So I can call with this transaction, and then when I'm done, even though I might be doing more work, but I'm done with all the important things, I can say finished.
Wow.
And so if I exit that scope without saying finished, it rolls back. If I say finished and I exit the scope, then the transaction keeps going. So this is kind of an auto-commit environment where if everything is finished, then it commits.
So, this is really fabulous, but, I think the challenge is going to be for a lot of people. A lot of people are not going to be able to write Vista-only applications for some time. That's going to take a while. And they're going to be writing apps that need to run work on Vista, but also down-level platforms. I mean, goodness, I was talking to somebody last week. I was down at a conference in Australia, in Sydney, and these guys were telling me, we're trying to get our customers off of Windows 98. Just going, oh my gosh, I can't
All
believe,
right.
But it just happens. People will have these down for a long time. So I think maybe sort of like step one of this is going to be, just thinking in terms of the compatibility of making sure that if TXF does something, my app doesn't freak out. And then sort of level two would maybe be like, I take advantage of it if it's there, and if it's not, I don't. I have more complicated code or whatever.
But a lot of people are in a fairly controlled environment. So, you know, think about a corporation that's doing document management today.
Oh, sure.
Right? And they've got an app server that's doing that management for them. Yeah. They can define, hey, that's a Longhorn server. And it's going to be running, you know, it's going to be using TXF to manage the documents. And, you know, Yukon SQL 2005 to handle the relational information. I have this application that I'm connecting to probably using web services.
But you're saying, right? though, running, it would, when you said Longhorn server, just so that people don't get lost in this, okay, so Windows Vista is a client OS release, right? And then there's Windows Server 2003 R2, which is the sort of an update to that server that does not include this.
Well, correct. That came out today.
Okay. And then there is going to be a follow-on server release that will include this at some future point.
Right. So after the Vista client release will be, and I use the term Longhorn server because we haven't named it yet.
Okay. Right.
That's marketing. It's not my department. But, right. But you know, whatever Vista's server release will be coming after Vista client release, which you know, from my point of view, is coming really soon now, right? So from our point of view in the development environment is we're pretty much done.
Yeah.
We're just stomping on bugs.
Hello.
So this is out there. So anybody who's using the community preview releases that are coming out, it's there, right? And in fact, TXF has been there since beta 1. It's just that the command line stuff hasn't shown up until the last month or so.
So yeah, because I can imagine like when you get this on the server OS, this is going to really really take off because. Then you could build a server app that relies on it, and you have easier time than you know only targeted certain client
exactly.
apps.
Exactly right. And so, you know, do I expect to see my mom using it on her client PC today? No. I mean, the reality is most people will be developing applications that need to run against Windows 98 and 2000 and whatever.
Yeah.
I would expect some utilities, some middleware that might use this. And again, they're going to write code that says, well, if it's on Vista, I do this. And if it's before Vista, then I have all this other logic. But on Vista, it just works better because it's more consistent. And I think you might see that in installers and things along those lines that are just utilities and middleware that, yes, has to work everywhere, but they can kind of fine-tune their applications for the operating system that they're working on. And 15 years from now, you're going to wonder why in the world we didn't have that in Windows 98. I mean, the people who are rewriting code 15 years from now, this is expected.
Oh.
And so this is the beginning. We're at the beginning of a revolution. Sometimes you never recognize it. I'm saying, I remember when try-catch was out there. Okay, that's why I have some gray hairs. I remember when try-catch came out, right?
Sure.
And now I'm seeing really all the pieces for transactions to just work with the registry, with the file system there. Those are the last pieces that's necessary for you just to write all your programs to be transactional and all your objects to be transactional and for you to really ignore that cleanup code. For you to not have to worry about testing the failure case, which I can't emphasize, you know, enough. How many people, you know, look at their code coverage analysis on their tests and go, oh, you know, yeah, it's 60%, but really there's 40%. All of that's error handling, and then
who needs to test that anyway?
Or they write all sorts of macros that say don't count this section of code because we rarely run it, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right. I used to have a macro that says, you know, in some rare case, do this, and what that was a statement to the tools we use to say, you know, what's our coverage like? don't count this.
Yeah, right.
Right? In the unlikely event that.
Yeah.
I think that was the name of the macro. We don't need to do that anymore, right?
Oh, sure.
It's not there. I don't need that macro anymore because right. there is no in unlikely event. That's handled for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the only unlikely event is I have to put up a window that says, oh, something went wrong, and this is what it was.
Okay, so people are who are listening to this are like, maybe like want to go experiment with this or learn a little bit more. So you're going to send me some. We talked about earlier. You can send me some links to resources or whatever.
Right.
But just tell me, for the listener's sake, what kind of things can they do or what should they look for or do to learn from this?
Well, the first thing you can do is you just sit down, pull up a command window, say transaction/. Well, say /?. It'll give you the inline help. And you'll see it'll say start that transaction, and you can, roll back that transaction or commit that transaction. Transaction/start, transaction/commit, transaction/rollback.
So just write some little batch files,
right.
play with it
do,
first.
Do some X copies. You'll be able to see, there's some isolation, and I can do, I'm working on three different disks, and I'm copying files all over. I've deleted them. I've created some files. Play with that. You'll get an idea of, look at that. All this is supported, and I can actually see, or I cannot see the changes because they're isolated.
Yeah.
I can get all my stuff back. I deleted all of my directories, and I said, oops, that wasn't the right directory. I can say transaction rollback.
So that makes an interesting point. Would this have any... Does this touch the recycle bin in some way, or I don't know that it met. I guess it would only help in during the transaction scope that, you would...
Right. Yeah. One of the problems you run into the recycle bin is that we may want to transact putting stuff into the recycle bin, but then it stays there.
Yeah.
You want to have long-range transactions, just like databases.
Same way, yeah.
Same mentality, right? You have logs, you have to worry about system resources, but... So you do short types of things, and what do you do in the shell? You want to have a lot of undos and redos,
right?
And there's where transactions don't help you, right? They don't help you redo anything.
Sure.
Right? You can undo it all.
Yeah.
Right? But you're not going to get multiple levels of undo. You're going to get one level of undo.
Right.
And you're not going to have any redos. And so it's not a complete... solution for those people who are trying to have an easy Control Z, yeah. Control Y yeah, implementation,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I don't solve that for them. What I solve here is consistency.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I do want to delete everything out of that trash can, and I want it all to be deleted. Well, okay,
yeah.
then I can wrap that action that I write in my application code to delete it.
Well, do you think the shell will take advantage of any, sometimes you're going to move a directory, right? And you go to or you go to move it, and then it gets like half of the files done, and then it goes bam, something it doesn't like,
right.
And then you're like half of the files got moved, and the other half didn't.
Right.
Will the shell take it fix that?
Well, so the shell does provide you some undo facilities right now, right?
Yeah.
And so actually, with working with the shell group, we're not going to have anything in Vista today that uses transactions, but we did talk about. What could be and what might be and some of the interesting areas and some of the interesting problems.
Yeah.
For instance, the shell, they don't want isolated actions.
Oh, uh-huh.
Right? They want somebody to be able to watch what's going on as it's moving those files.
Yeah.
People are used to that. That's what they are used to today.
Yeah.
They have multiple levels of undo and redo. So today, if something goes wrong, I don't know if you know this, but in shell, you can hit Control Z and it'll undo that.
I never thought of that. I swear, I never once thought that I might undo something in the shell.
Right. So they support undo and redo. So that area is transactions don't fully help them. We've talked about where we could help them and what changes we might need to do or enhancements might we do in the future. I expect stay tuned. We'll have they'll be using transactions in future releases of the operating system. But today, for what they're delivering, transactions aren't appropriate.
Okay.
And again, if I go into their code, I probably can find a couple of places where transactions will be used. And in fact, that's going to be what we see in the future. Little areas. It's like, here's a classic example. You update your Word document,
yeah.
right? well, what happens? I create a whole new file with my updates.
Right.
And then it gets renamed
yeah.
to, over the file. So you never have a corrupted file.
Right.
Right? Well, okay, you still want to have the ability, if the system goes down, to get it back. You know, the last thing you wanted to do is to have it rolled back and all my changes went away, it. Right? Yeah. You want to have that recovery experience.
Sure.
But that rename,
yeah.
you want that rename to be atomic. You want it to sure. completely succeed or to not succeed at all.
Right.
So that rename should be inside of transaction.
Well, or, you know, I can imagine that a lot of times just, you know, the potential for corruption during writes, it just happens when something goes wrong at just the exact moment, you know.
Right.
And so I could imagine, like, checkpointing the file at certain points, you know, like, we're going to save it every 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And we checkpoint the file, and that's done under a transaction so that we don't, you know, we run less risk of the
right.
corrupted and all that. Yeah, that would be cool.
And your checkpoint's usually going to be a copy over what was there.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be done within a transaction. Now, I want to point out that the transactions are bound to the file handle.
Yeah.
Okay. So you basically declare your transaction and you open your file handle, and now that file, all the actions done in that file handle are within the context of this transaction.
Okay.
When the transaction's committed,
yeah.
That file handle is basically useless.
Right.
If it's still open, it doesn't yeah. have to be open. You could have closed it long ago.
Right.
If it's still open, it's only used to basically close it. It's holding a lock, maybe, or some things like that. But all you can do with it is now close that handle. So I've had people ask, well, what I want to do is start a transaction open that handle, and then later I want to commit the transaction and start a new transaction and use it with the same handle.
Oh, I see.
Can't do that, right? Can't
yeah.
do that, at least not yet. I hear people want that. But in version 1, we can't do that.
Well,
and
this sounds, you know, that reminds me very much of the idea with sort of like COM+, that, you know, you create a transactional object, it does its transaction, when it exits the scope of that object, the whole thing gets disposed. Even
right.
if you tried to hold a handle to it, basically you can't do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going to... Well, that's why I've enforced just-in-time activation.
Right.
Because you have this thorny problem of accessing transacted data outside the scope of the transaction, which could, most of the time, would probably not hurt you, but every now and then it would cause you a problem, right? So that would be dangerous.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, what we've done is said that, you know, commit or rollback, that's the end of the life of that. And you have to also understand that what does commit really mean? We yeah. flush that data to disk.
Sure.
Right? So, you know, everything associated with that file is now on disk, it's durable, it's done. We would have to, under the covers anyway,
yeah.
rebuild all those structures.
Cool.
So so why not just close the handle and rebuild all those structures?
Okay, so you have also some other resources too, so I can play with it at the command line prompt.
Oh, yeah, you can do the command line prompt. And I should point out, you can do some registry operations with the reg command.
Uh-huh.
So you could do those, and your file operations and your registry operations are coordinated by this transaction.
Ah, cool.
So, I mean, this is really cool, and I expect to see, you know, real simple brain-dead installers. I don't have to go write anything fancy.
Yeah,
I have a command line script that installs
you
things.
Know, oh, so I can imagine like a very common scenario, right, where I X-copy a bunch of assemblies onto something, and then let's say I have to register an enterprise services mm-hmm. class, or I have to put something in the GAC, and something goes wrong, and I have to say, poof,
right.
you know, roll it all back.
Yeah,
now, that would be very cool.
Right, and that's a simple thing, and you don't have to go off and do some installer, right,
yeah.
script.
Yeah.
You just do it this way. So that's today. In your actual C# code, the enter and exit transaction scope, and again, I'm going to say the best way to do it is cut and paste some code that you will point at. That's in
okay.
either Jim's blog or up on one of my websites.
Yeah.
And so, it's using system transactions and then using a kernel transaction scope, open the file.
Okay.
And you could also, or update a registry key.
Yeah.
And in those, you can also coordinate it with your file, with your database and everything else using that system transactions. And
sure.
do that today, WinFX code, it you can do a hello world thing in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Right? And so why not? And then all of a sudden say, hey, where can I use this? Olay, you know, it's going to be a little more complicated than WinFX, but again, it's the same same concept.
Yeah.
You use the enter and exit transaction scope now directly. And there's also, you could do it in Win32 with C.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and in this case, since it's Win32, you're really going directly to the kernel.
Sure.
And if you're in Win32, you're not doing any database operations, but
right.
you can do your file system and your registry operations. So the example I used in PDC is I had a little tool that moved the files and updated the registry to
yeah.
show, and the example application I had was just a photo store that was a service. So I would move that service and update the registry key that pointed to where that the store's base location is with a simple Win32 app.
Yeah.
So, you know, all those examples are out there. They're real easy to do, real easy to use. Again, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make transactions easy to use.
Yeah.
Not very expensive to use. Available everywhere. Everywhere. You kind of they're ubiquitous is the term there. They're everywhere. And at least in Vista they are.
Excellent. Well, that's so cool. I'm really looking forward to this. So Dana, thanks for coming by today.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. So what do you think? Do you think we'll someday just come to rely on transactions everywhere for all kinds of error management? I mean, we've already done that with databases, right? I mean, who would think about building a highly transactional system without a relational database to manage it for you? Well, who knows? I think that's got a lot of potential, and I'm really looking forward to playing around with it in Windows Vista and you know, writing my batch files with transactions. I think that would be so cool. But hey, we have a great podcast coming up on the next episode, thinking about deployment. What if you wrote a smart client application, a mission-critical application, for 50,000 desktops deployed globally? How would you do it? Well, that's just the kind of thing that the team who builds HeadTracks, which is an internal Microsoft IT application, has done. And so I thought it would be kind of fun to sit down and talk with those guys about the challenges of deployment in a global enterprise. Maybe some of you are doing the same thing. What do you think? Well, send me some notes. Tell me what you think. ron.jacobs@microsoft.com. I'd love to hear from you. If you like the show, if you don't like the show, just tell me. Anyway, we'll catch you next time on ARC Talk.